In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost. Amen. If I do not become a saint, I am a failure. In today's world, such a statement is absolutely ridiculous. In today's world that is so completely absorbed with the whole idea of achievement, of accumulation, of success, of money, of property, of prosperity, of power, such a statement is utterly ridiculous and not to be trusted. But nevertheless, if I do not become a saint, I am a failure. There are many things that are militating against this today for us. Things that are getting in our way, things that are confusing us, things that are filling us with uncertainty and misunderstanding and misrepresentation. Today we speak of virtue. We speak of the achievement, because achievement, after all, today, as you know, is a very, very important key word. We speak of the achievement of virtue, the achievement of purity, the achievement of humility, the achievement of charity, whatever, whatever. But we do not speak of the becoming virtuous. The achievement of virtue and the becoming of virtuous are two different things altogether. And we simply have to understand that. Otherwise, we can spend an entire life working toward the achievement of this or that virtue and still lose our immortal souls. Now, wouldn't that be a dreadful loss? We tell the monks, they can put on the habit of a monk or a nun, put on the habit of a nun, and that means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. We speak of commitment. What is commitment? We have to go beyond commitment. We commit ourselves to political parties. Why do we commit ourselves to political parties? We commit ourselves to political parties. In politics, when we play politics, because this particular political group agrees with what I think. And I do not belong to that political party, because that political party disagrees with what I think. Last Sunday, we spoke of some sensitive issues concerning the time of our death. This Sunday, we must also speak in terms of some sensitive thoughts concerning our present existence. We have to ask ourselves a very serious question. The most serious question. As I've told you over and over, I do not propose, nor do we propose. Last week I spoke to you that every statement I make goes through the hammer mill of all the monks. The question that I propose is, why do I come to this church? I use the word church advisedly. Once upon a time, the word Catholic Church and the word Catholic religion were synonymous. No longer. The word Catholic religion today means one thing. The word Catholic Church today means something else. But why do I come to this church? What is my reason for setting foot into this church, which after all, coming here does indeed, and we know, does indeed set others on edge against us? Why do I come to this church? My beloved people, I think, and I have had others elsewhere to think in a similar way with me, that there are those among us. I hope there are none here, but the thing has to be said. It has to be understood. It has to be presented. Why do I come here to this, I use again the word, church? Why, if I were a Protestant, why, if this were the case, did I pick up my letter from that church and bring it to this church? Why? And here comes the question. Is it because what goes on in this church agrees with the way I think? And the reason why I left the church across the street is because it disagrees with the way I think. My beloved people, we've heard the use of the word truth. Once we have come upon and been presented truth, the point of truth, the needle point of truth, which is God, of course, we must be with that truth. And it is only because we have started concentric circles around that truth, each circle becoming wider and wider and wider, and becoming farther and farther and farther away from that point of truth, the confusion has stepped in. Today we call it the walk of the labyrinth. The labyrinth does not. The labyrinth, what is a labyrinth doing? The labyrinth is leading us, yes, it is leading us to something. And what is that something? That something is me. And they tell you so, because you go there to discover whom? You go there to discover yourself. And to forget the point of truth in the center of things. That is what the labyrinth is doing. And so we have opinions. My beloved people, we strive to be free. You've heard the expression, the kids use it all the time, truth sets me free. And they're right. But the truth that they're speaking of, which is the same kind of truth that now we speak of, is an invented truth. Truth is not invented. Truth is discovered. And the truth that we present here, we have discovered no truth. We do not pretend to be discovering any truth. But the truth that we present here is the truth that has the authority of 2,000 years, and it has the authority of the word of a countless number of this earth's greatest scholars. And besides that, the truth that is presented here has been written not in gold, not in silver, but it has been written in the blood of countless martyrs who died for it. When we are in the presence of this truth, opinion steps out the door. We can have an opinion about a political issue. That's perfectly all right. We can have an opinion about anything else, but we cannot have an opinion about truth. Let us go perhaps in the field of mathematics. May we have, or are we permitted to have, an opinion about the truth that 2 + 2 = 4? If we ever hope to expect to reach the correct conclusion at the end of this mathematical procedure, we must start off with the basic solid truth. However, if I start off with my own personal opinion, I think that 2 + 2 = 5. And I start off in my mathematical procedure. My beloved people, you know, does it take some kind of a genius to tell us that the achievement of the arrival at a correct answer in that regard is utterly impossible? We cannot reach a correct answer on that. And so in religion we've done the same thing, and as a consequence, we have had nothing in the past several years but confusion. But they speak of authority, and the authority they speak of is hardly more than 30 or 35 or 40 or 45 years, and they put that in the balance with that of 2000. And somehow or other, with some of these people, 35 years carries much more weight than 2000. When we are in the presence of truth, there is no such thing as opinion. If you want to save your soul. And that is that. There are some of us who have come to the conclusion erroneously, and today there's so much erroneous thinking, so much free thinking, so much loose thinking, so much incorrect thinking. There are those who think that all I need to know is my catechism, and I'm a Catholic. All I need to know is what my catechism says, and I will save my soul. And I will say to that, remember that this is all on tape, and it is subject to the scrutiny of anybody here or elsewhere who wants to hear it. This is not a personal trip that I am on. We must follow the dictates of truth. I was going to say something and I lost that when I picked up the tape machine. Maybe it'll come back to me. But my beloved people, the catechism, oh yes, the catechism is not the instrument that will save my soul. Let's understand that clearly. The catechism merely points out the direction that I am to follow. In our bulletins over the past many months, you have heard over and over again, you have read the expression Catholic experience. Where is Catholic experience today? In the Novus Ordo? No. Is it in traditional groups? I know what you think I'm going to say, but I'm not going to say what you think I'm going to say. It's not there either. And many traditional groups, unfortunately, are putting out a kind of Catholicism that is simply on tape. It is simply not Catholic. And some of the things that they put out and teach as Catholic are simply not Catholic. May I give you an example of how bizarre some of our Catholic teaching can be? Just the other day, about a week or 10 days ago, I had a call from a priest friend, a very good traditional priest. He's conscientious. He certainly is working hard, and he has a chapel in another part of this country. He calls me from time to time. He's a younger man than I, but that doesn't say much for him. He's a younger man than I, and he calls me occasionally to get questions answered. In the process of this question-answering period, he was sad. He had lost a most precious friend, and he felt terrible about it. He was very sad. He had to have Dingy put to sleep because Dingy, an old dog, meant that much to him, and he felt poorly for that. But there's one thing that consoled him. This is from a Catholic priest, my beloved people. A Catholic traditional priest, my beloved people. But he says, there's one thing that consoles me, and that is that I know my dinghy is in heaven and is waiting for me. I didn't answer him. But there are those who will twist Catholicism into something that is worse than scrambled eggs. It is an invented Catholicism. It is a manufactured Catholicism, and it simply is not Catholicism. And it only proves that the reason why I come to this or that church just as I do to a political party is because that church agrees with me. Therefore, all the people who have little dinghies are going to find it convenient to go to Father So-and-so's church because dinghies go to heaven, and therein lies Catholicism. If that's the case, every time I eat a piece of fried chicken, I am forced to go on a guilt trip because that chicken is going to be waiting for me in heaven to confront me. Catholicism is in trouble because it is in the hands of those who do not know Catholicism. You say, well then, are you telling me that opinion is not permitted in the Catholic Church? That opinion has never been allowed in Catholic Church? Not so. Opinion is very much alive in the Catholic Church. But there's one thing about it, that the opinion does not concern the point of the center of the circle. That cannot be touched by anybody. I don't care who it is. Nobody. The procedure of getting around to that point, that's where opinion comes into play. Truth cannot be touched by anybody. And we call this the magisterium of the church. The magisterium of the church is that which it's not a body of human beings that are alive today. That's the living magisterium. And the unfortunate part of it all is that today's magisterium is a living magisterium, and it is inventing one truth after another. They get up every morning with a brand new truth to invent, to invent, to invent. And Catholicism has become a complete mishmash of junk. That which is magisterium and has the authority of the centuries, that is the truth. And the church of 2,000 years is that which has put its stamp of approval and says, this point is truth. And as soon as that is said, and up to that point also, you will have opinion. Once the church says, this is the way it is, opinion stops right where it is. And nobody else has a right to challenge it. Or else the word heretic will come into play. My beloved people, we struggle here to present only that which is safely true. And if we come here simply and only because in our opinion their teaching agrees with mine, then we don't belong here. Because everything we do will be worthless. It absolutely is worthless. It is not worth the time of day that it takes you to get here. You could use your day much more profitably mowing the lawn. At least the lawn gets mowed. It is no longer time for us to fool around. The time is drawing near. There is a deadline. And we are headed for it. And to go toward that headline carrying with us the stupidities, and I use that word advisedly, the stupidities that are floating around all over the place, and believe me, you know it and I know it, you can find a book to answer your question any way you want it answered today. All you got to go is to the library. But now you don't have to go to the library. Go to the internet. And you can find any answer that will satisfy what you need to know, what you desire to know. What you desire to know. It is not a matter of commitment. If commitment to a cause is the reason why these people you see dressed in black are coming here to stay, then I'd be the first to ask them to leave. They are here because they must believe. And you are here, and you come here because you must believe. Not because I said so, because I am like you. I must believe, and I must believe in its totality what the truth is. I am not at liberty to say, well, that's your opinion, I have mine. That's not a church, that's an assembly. That's all it is. And do you think for one second, do I think for one second that if I held on to my opinion about this or that or the other, that that would be for me a method of salvation. Not so. Now you may choose not to believe that. I can't do a thing about that. But don't be surprised when someone questions you at a later date. Don't be surprised. The fundamental thing that is absolutely devastating everything and everybody today is a way of life that gains all of its nourishment from pride. And pride is an insidious thing, because the proud person doesn't realize that he's proud. The proud person goes about life thinking that he is humble, because he is sticking with what he or she maintains, this is the truth. By whose standards? By what standard? Well, the Catechism said so. If I were to teach the Catechism from this pulpit, I've done it once and that's enough, and that's all it's ever going to be. It'd be the simplest thing in the world to do. The Lord, why did God make me? He made me to know Him, to love Him, to serve Him, and to be with Him forever in this, to be with Him, whatever it says, to serve Him in this life and to be with Him forever in heaven. How wonderful it would be, how simple it would be to simply stick to that point and be done with it. But what we're trying to do, the Catechism only puts a coating on us. It points out the way I have to love God. It does not tell me how to love God. It does not show me how to love God. And therefore, I stumble from one mistake to another. And my pride refuses to turn loose of me and lets me wander on and on. And my glib tongue makes me so persuasive when I'm trying to prove to the others how absolutely right I am. And to say something a bit funny, it's so hard to be humble when you are perfect in every way. We are working with a deadline. And if we, and our deadline, the deadline is not this that is around me. The deadline is with me. The deadline is with you. And it is no longer time for me to be dilly-dallying. And I hate to bring this up, but nevertheless, it has to be brought up. Our own children, our own mothers and fathers, our own brothers and sisters, our own relatives and aunts and cousins and so on, and neighbors. You see, they have taken two and two, and their teachers have taught them that it can equal five, maybe six, even 10, if that's what you want. And so, how many of us, my own family included, do not find absolute paganism amongst those we love most? If you come here and you have not investigated the exact reason why you come here,
It is such a loss of time. Such a waste of time. What's on the altar has been pointed to many times. It is in the center of our being. It is our faith. In conclusion, I don't see them in church today. Someone talk about them. On the reverse side of your bulletin, you will read where this church is about to be given an enormous blessing. An entire family, father, mother, and three children, half grown children, are going to be baptized as a family unit on August the 15th. It so happens that this particular family is very much involved in the educational field. As a matter of fact, he is a teacher. I don't know, I've never asked to what degree or what element or what level of education at the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa. He is a teacher. He is an educated man. For over 2 years, between 2 and 3 years, we have talked. As far as their knowing the catechism goes, they know the catechism, and they know it well. But it was only what they themselves have admitted. We have not had the gift of faith. We do not rightly believe. And before we come into your house, we must believe. About a month ago, they came and said to me, "We believe." And the gift of faith has been given to these people. None of us are worthy of the gift of faith. But these people have received this tremendous gift. And the minute, the instant that it touched their souls, they reacted. And on August the 15th, next, they will be baptized. The whole family, the entire family. Isn't that absolutely magnificent? And it is only after they were able to admit, not to me, because I am unimportant, it was only after they were able to admit to themselves, in all humility, "I do not yet believe, and I have to believe before I am worthy of this tremendous gift." And there you have it. My beloved people, it is all there. And unless and until we believe, if we do not have the gift of faith, it is all lost. And if I do not become a saint, I am a failure. It is not what I do that will make me a saint. It is what I am. I will repeat that, lest perhaps somebody didn't hear it. It is not what I do that will make me a saint. It is what I am that will make me a saint. And for the final time, I will say it again. It is not what I do that will make me a saint. It is what I am.